You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
My name is Lester William Broadhead. I go by Les, and I was born June 5th, 1943. And actually born in Holy Cross Hospital in Salt Lake City.
Les Broadhead is a kind and humble man who has learned some really profound life lessons throughout his journey. He explains those lessons through entertaining and unique stories from his 80 years on Earth. He played sports and loves cars. He has four kids to whom he was a single father for a while, and then two more with his wife, Diane. He had a long and successful career in education, including 19 years as an elementary school principal. But his story begins with his maternal grandfather who moved from Sweden to Utah after joining The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
He was born in 1840. He was 25 when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. This is my grandfather. There's a huge 100-year difference between my, more than 103-year difference between my grandfather and me.
Les's paternal grandparents were also converts to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Europe. They immigrated to Utah and were assigned to settle in Nephi. There, they created a small community about 7 miles south. That's where Les's family had a ranch, where they lived for the first 2 years of his life.
When they brought me home from the hospital, they were living on a ranch, which was about 7 miles south of Nephi. That house out on the ranch that had no modern facilities, no running water, no electricity, and had one older sister, Mina. She was 4 years old, and we lived there until I was two, and then moved into Nephi, into the family home where my grandmother had lived. She had passed away, and it was a little one-bedroom house, and the bedroom had two beds in it. And growing up, I shared one bed with my sister, and my parents shared the other bed, all in the same room. When I was about five, they said, "We think maybe you're too old to sleep in the same bed." And so from that point on, I slept in the bed with my dad, and she slept in the bed with my mom. So that's how we grew up. And it was fairly primitive, too. We had electricity and running water, but no indoor bathroom. It had a living room and a kitchen and one bedroom. And it was heated by a coal stove. And that's what my mom cooked on, and it heated the entire house. And when I was about six, we had a fire. They had left the fire going to keep the house warm, but because of that fire from then on, they said, we have to have fire completely out before we go to bed. So there are times it got below zero, and I remember waking up and looking out, and I could see my breath coming out from under the sheets, and it got pretty cold in that bedroom. My dad was a farmer. When I came along, I was the only son of an only son, and he had waited all these years to have a helper on the farm. And so he started taking me with him from the time I can remember. And my dad was a hard worker, but when he was about 9 or 10, he had either a stroke, or some people said he had polio. It was in the 1800s, so we don't know what he had, but it left him crippled with one hand that was bent and paralyzed, and he limped. And he only grew to be 5 feet 4 inches tall, and probably had something to do with his social life. He never talked about it. I don't know about it, but I know he talked about spending a lot of summers herding sheep, just staying out in a sheep wagon and not associating with people much. And that probably had a lot to do with him getting married so late in life. But I became his helper, and he was anxious to take me out there and teach me everything that he could. And my parents, I don't know if they were unique or if it was the era. It seemed like somewhat it was, but people didn't show a lot of physical affection or say they loved each other. And I find even today, it's really hard to say, I love you. I haven't had any trouble hugging and kissing my kids when they're little and loving them. But my parents didn't do that, except one time when I was about 6 or 7. My dad was and some other farmers were separating a calf from a cow. So they went in the corral and they opened the gate about 2 feet or so. And they said, "Now we're going to drive the calf out and the cow's going to come behind it. Once the calf passes, you get in there and wave your arms." And the cow just ran over me like I wasn't even there, just trampled me. And my dad ran over and picked me up and hugged me and said, "Are you all right? Are you okay?" And I started to cry, not because I was hurt, but because that was the first time he had ever shown that kind of tenderness. I mean, I knew he loved me. I knew my parents loved me. There was no question, but they never did say it or show it. And that was a very special experience.
Another special thing Les and his dad shared on the farm was learning to drive.
Of course, when he was growing up, there were no cars. And so driving was kind of a new thing to him, but he did have a car and he was anxious to teach me how to drive. And he'd have me sit next to him in the middle. Back then, there were bench seats and I would steer and he would run all the pedals. And finally, one day when I was only 7, but I remember it just as clear as can be because I was so excited. He got out to open a gate and he just waved at me and he said, "Drive the car through." And even had a hay wagon on the back and I was all nervous. Of course, stick shift, I could barely reach the clutch and I was able to get it in gear and pulled the car through and I just thought I was something pretty big. That was pretty cool. I thought I loved to drive. Actually, I still love to drive today. It really caught hold.
Les loved to drive so much that he was given the job of driving the tractor on the dry farm. His dad would leave him on the tractor to go work in some other fields about a mile away and then drive the car back and pick him up in the evening.
It was getting late. I was getting tired and the sun was going down and I wanted to go home. I thought, where in the world is my dad? Because my parents were older, in fact, none of my friends had parents as old as mine. My mother had pure white gray hair from the time I can remember. I never knew her with any other color hair. And so when I'd go and play with my friends and see their parents, they looked a lot different than my parents. And I remember even when I was 6 or 7, starting thinking about, what if my parents died? They're so old. And I'd cry myself to sleep. Well, this particular day when he didn't come back, I thought maybe something's happened to him. Maybe I should try and go up there. I didn't know how to unhook the tractor. I couldn't drive up there, and it was quite a ways away. And so I just kept going round and round in the field. And then finally, it was a dirt road, and I could see from up where the houses were the truck coming down the road. And it got to the point where there was an intersection, and that's where he would turn over to the property I was on. When it got to that intersection, it just kept going. And I, what's happened? And then I thought, something's happened to my dad. Finally, just as the sun was setting, I saw the dirt kicking up from the main highway up that dirt road, got to the intersection, turned over and came in, and it was my dad. And I was so mad. I said, "Dad, where have you been? How could you leave me like this?" He said, "Well, I had a guy from Levan, which is further south of Nephi, helping me. And I thought, well, you could get some more work in while I was taking him home." I don't know. I was still mad at him for that. Then when I was 10 years old, my father did die. And that was a pretty tough time. I had my sister who was 15. He was 67 when he died. And so I've often wondered what would happen if, as time went on. I was almost 11. It was the end of my 5th grade year. But I do remember kind of having a little bit of a rough time in 6th grade. I wasn't as good a student. I think I'd been a very conscientious, obedient student. And I often wonder if it's because my dad died and I didn't have quite the same anchor, I suppose. And I just remember, of course, being brokenhearted and lost. The summer came, and what am I going to do? And there was a guy that ran a service station just 2 blocks from our house. that started a Little League baseball program. First time in Nephi to have Little League baseball, and I loved sports. And so I ended up hanging out at his service station. Back then, the service station attendant would go out and wait on people, fill their tank, check their tire, check the oil, wash their windshield. In fact, sometimes I couldn't quite reach the center of the windshield. And I remember a guy saying, "It looks worse than when you started." But I did my best. And again, he made me feel very needed, very important, that I could do things. He never paid me either, but he'd buy me a pop or something every once in a while. But other than that, I mean, I just loved doing it and feeling important and feeling like I was accomplishing something. And so it kept me busy all summer long. And I remember going down there one time on a Sunday. He said, "What are you doing here? Aren't you supposed to be in church?" "Nah, I didn't want to go to church today. I want to come out here." "You go home, you get to church. You don't come down here on Sunday." So even though he wasn't active at all, he looked out for me, and I felt that it really filled a void, a huge void. And I have my good friend, Bob Wetherell. He said, "Hey, I signed up to play the trombone in the band. You want to play the trombone?" A new trombone costs $40, which was a lot of money then. And I don't even know how we survived. And somehow she bought me a new trombone. She sacrificed. I still have that trombone. It's pretty special to me.
That she Les is referring to is his mom, who worked so hard to care for her kids after losing her husband. Les remembers some of the many things she did to make sure her kids had everything that they needed.
When I was 12, Gene Fulmer was fighting for the middleweight championship, and he was a member of the church, and I wanted to see that so bad. I said, "Mom, we got to get a TV." Somehow she was able to buy a TV. And then somehow she was able to put an indoor bathroom in our house when I was 12. We never lacked for anything. I mean, we weren't rich by any means, and I worked and did a lot of different things to earn a little bit of money. But even though that sounds like pretty hard times, looking back, it sounds really tough, but she just made life seem good. And she didn't have any kind of a skill for an occupation. I don't know how we survived after that, but somehow she made it. We had a pickup. She sold that, got some money. Therefore, I no longer had anything to drive.
Despite his lack of vehicle, Les's love for and longing to drive continued. Luckily, he was able to get a job driving a tractor for one of his buddy's dads on their farm. Pretty soon, though, he wanted a car of his own.
When I was 15, this friend and I, Neil Kendall was his name, saw this 48 Chevy convertible for sale for $75. And so we bought it. The week after we bought it, it threw five rods and had to get repaired. And that cost us another $45. And my friend Neil said, "Well, I don't have any money." And so it sat in the shop. And finally, I said, "Neil, what if I got $45 and I paid for the car? Can I just keep the car?" And he was glad to just let me have it. So I had myself a car and no driver's license, no insurance. I don't know. My poor mom. I look back now and wonder how she survived raising us.
So Les, it sounds like your mom would just pretty much do anything that she could to help you get what you wanted and what you needed. But I know she wasn't the only one who helped you out. Tell me about getting your blue convertible.
My dream car in high school was a 52 Ford convertible painted Bermuda blue. I couldn't have got that, but my sister loaned me the money. We bought that for $400 and she was going to school and working part-time. I don't know how she had the money, but that car I had for quite a few years and really enjoyed that. Took me a lot of places.
That's really cool. And what else were you involved in high school besides driving?
One of the things that I loved growing up was sports. From first grade on, I wanted to be a football player. I don't know why, because we didn't have a television. I'd never seen a game that I know of, but I was just drawn to football. And first grade, I used to go down to Tom Whitaker's house and play with him and his brothers after school. And we'd tackle each other and roll around in the dirt. And just, I thought that was the most fun in the world. So when I was in ninth grade, we could try out for the varsity football team. And I wanted to make that team more than anything I'd ever wanted before in my life. And I knew that there were a lot of kids, only so many freshmen made the team. And a lot of kids my age were better athletes than I was. So I wasn't sure if I was going to make the team, but I thought, I'm going to pray about it.
That decision to pray was influenced by a previous experience he had had with prayer, but it also changed his relationship with God and others for the rest of his life.
When I was in the first grade, I got a wind-up train for Christmas, and I loved that train. It just had an oval track, but every night after school, I would come home and I'd play that. One night I came home and it had a track missing. And so that night I decided to pray. And with childlike faith, I don't think I asked that I'd find it. I just asked Heavenly Father to return the track. And then I came home from school the next day with childlike faith that it would be there. And it was. I don't know how it got there, but I just said, oh, Heavenly Father answered my prayer. Just like that. And so from then on, I believed, although I only prayed basically when I wanted something, I guess. But here I was again in desperate need of Heavenly Father's help. But it wasn't a one-day situation. Tryouts and practice went on for 2 or 3 weeks. So I had to pray every day. Well, it made quite a difference in my life because at that point, during my eighth grade year, leading up to my ninth grade year, I went through puberty. And I grew from an average seventh grader's height to my present height. Never grew another inch at the beginning of ninth grade. I was just shy of 5'11". And so I was pretty good size, so that helped my chances with football. But during that year, I was just ornery and miserable. And I also got an early morning paper out. And I am not a morning person. Never was, never will be. And so when I'd get to school, I was mean and ornery and wasn't very nice to people. And I got in fist fights with my best friends in gym class. And one time the coach, which is kind of unprecedented, said, well, all right, if you're going to fight, let's make it fair. He got a rope out and had guys hold it in the four corners to make a ring. And then he put gloves on us and we had a boxing match. And it was Neil Kendall, my buddy, almost like a brother. I mean, I practically lived with their family on the farm when I worked for his dad. And every kid in that gym class, except one, went in his corner. And they said, Neil, I hope you kill him. I wish I could beat him. And I kind of realized, hey, I'm not very well liked. But I don't care. Well, I just went out there and with my attitude just pounded away and beat him. But it made me stop and think a little bit, at least. But I still didn't change a whole lot until that summer just before school when we started trying out for football and I started praying every day. Because I thought, well, if I'm going to have Heavenly Father answer my prayer, I've got to be nice to people. I've got to do the right things. And so I started evaluating everything I did in terms of, if I do that, will he answer my prayers? It was that important to me to make the football team. And little by little, I found myself just changing to a very different person. And I can honestly say in those few weeks' time, it transformed my life. Finally, the day came when the coach said, we're going to take 33 players, three teams to Milford, Utah. Was our first game. We only have that many seats on the bus. So I'm going to post the list on the coach's door, and after school, you can come look. So I remember that day just with great anticipation and hardly make it through the day, and ran over and looked at that list, and I had all the seniors' names, then I had all the juniors' names, and then it had the sophomores, and then the freshmen. And there were only four freshmen. And I was one of them. I was so excited, I could hardly believe it. And I was just almost floated home that day as I walked home. I remember the very spot as I was standing on the corner in front of Homer Carver's house. And I thought to myself, this has been the hardest few weeks of my life, trying to be good every day and be nice to people and say and do the right things. And whew, I don't have to do that anymore. And praying every day, that's a lot of work. I don't have to pray anymore. And then it struck me that that was probably the most ungrateful attitude I'd ever heard. So I made a commitment that day that I would pray every day. And I've kept that commitment to this day. And it's made all the difference in my life.
That place on the football team eventually took Les to Dixie State University on a football scholarship. After his first year, his older sister Mina was encouraging him to serve a mission. When he said that it wasn't in his plans, she decided to serve and went off to Sweden. It was in that summer that Les had a change of heart.
During that summer, there were several young men a few years older than I was that had been on missions, and I went to their homecoming speeches. And I just remember feeling so elated and lifted and inspired by their experiences and their words. I just thought, this is the greatest feeling in the world. And I thought, how can I keep that feeling all the time? I thought, go on a mission. So after my sophomore year of college, I was called to the Northern California Mission. I had a wonderful mission. It was a very productive mission. Just the other day, I was going through some of my papers, and I realized how much emphasis they put on getting baptisms and the competition that they had to be number one. And they had a nifty 50, the top 50 baptizers. That was my goal. I wanted to baptize all these people. Well, the last few months of my mission, I was a zone leader, and I look back now, I mean, it was like a sports team. I mean, who's going to be best? And I remember looking at the Nevada elders, seemed to be tops, and I thought, darn, I hope they don't have that many baptisms this month. And it just really struck me. I'm on a mission trying to bring people into the church, and I'm hoping they won't be successful so I can be number one. And remember the scripture that says you should work with an eye single to the glory of God. So from that point on, I started emphasizing to the elders, we want to do it because that's what we're here for, is to bring souls unto Christ.
When Les returned to Nephi after his mission, he immediately enrolled at BYU. And after just a few days at home, he moved to Provo. Mina had been home for about a year, and their mom was looking forward to having them both home for the summer. However, their Aunt Laura in California informed Les of a job opportunity out there with a Safeway grocery store.
I left and didn't even go home to see Mom, and she was so looking forward to us all being together. Well, so I spent the summer working in California, and I thought, I'll have some money saved up. At the end of the summer, I'll go tour my mission. Well, Mom wrote and said, I'd like to come down and visit your Aunt Laura the week before you come home to school, and then I'll come home with you. I said, oh, Mom. Well, when she got there, I had joined the Marine Reserve earlier and had to go to summer camp in San Diego. So when she arrived, I wasn't even there.
This is another one of those incredible life lesson stories that Les has. He was just seeing a movie on the military base during summer camp when he was surprisingly summoned to the company commander's office.
For some reason, it just triggered this thought. Something's happened to my mom. I think I was feeling guilty for leaving it with her that, no, I don't want you to come down here. Then I dismissed that. Thought, that's foolish. So I went in there and the desk sergeant said, you're supposed to call this number. And it was my Aunt Laura's where I was staying. And then I really thought something's happened to my mother. I called and the line was busy. Asked the sergeant, did they say why they called? And I said, well, no. And then he kind of looks at me and says, and by the way, these guys were nice to me. They're usually not very nice to you. He said, just that there's been a death in the family. Oh my gosh, I just about lost it. So I tried to call again and the line was busy. That caused me to go through my whole life with my mom and thinking about her life. Her mother died when she was only four. And so she was raised by a foster family, a foster couple, older couple, that basically when she got a little older, she had to take care of. She faithfully served this lady until she was in her 20s, and this lady passed away. And so then she moved in with her brothers, and she took care of them and She finally met my dad and got married when she was 38 years old and moved to Nephi. So she had served other people her whole life. Well, she was very blessed to have children in her older age, but she doted on us and she took care of us, and she had sacrificed her whole life for this. She was so thrilled when I decided to go on a mission. She was so thrilled to have Mina go to Sweden. She was so excited when Mina came home, and then I was going to come home and we're all going to be together. And then I end up going down there, and now here she is. And in my mind, very old woman. She would have been in her 60s, but I thought she was ancient at the time. Anyway, all these things went through my mind. And finally, after a while, I got through and my aunt said, "Your cousin Bud died." I felt bad that Bud died, but I was so relieved and so thankful. I remember going out in the middle of a field and just sitting down and sobbing and saying, I had another promise again. I'll never, ever do anything to make my mother feel like I don't want her, that she's not accepted ever again. And hopefully I did that. I'm sure I wasn't the best son, but she was the most unconditionally loving person, special person that I have ever known in my life. And I really do appreciate now what she sacrificed and what she went through to create the life that she did for us.
After his summer in California, Les was back at school at BYU. He graduated with a degree in physical education with a minor in health education. He taught driver's ed for 10 years part-time while he taught seminary. And that was just the beginning of his career.
My goal was to be a football coach. Like, my high school football coach was a huge influence in my life. And I thought, I want to influence kids like that. So when I did my student teaching, I thought I could teach early morning seminary. And so I'm going to get certified in seminary too. So I did one class a day in seminary and the rest in PE. And after I had student taught for several weeks, the seminary people said, "How would you like to be a seminary teacher?" I said, "Well, no, I want to be a football coach." And they said, "Well, think it over. We'll give you a couple of weeks." And during that time, I started to evaluate and thought, seminary, the things I teach there matter no matter what they do in life. These are important principles. And so I said, okay, I'll teach seminary. And so I was assigned to Clearfield up in Davis County. And then my first contract was for $5,500 a year. And it wasn't very much. And so I taught driver ed part-time. And I did a lot of different part-time jobs. Installed coolers, air conditioners. I'd cleaned out storm sewers on Hill Air Force Base. And then we got a job at a lumber place making bomb pallets for bombs for Vietnam.
After 6 years teaching seminary in Clearfield, Les and his family went to Arizona, where he had been assigned to teach in a small seminary and on the San Carlos Apache Indian Reservation. After a couple years there, they once again returned to Clearfield.
I was married and had four children and then went through a divorce. So I had, for several years, all four of the children. The youngest was 3 and the oldest was 11, and they all lived with me. You know, life was a little bit tough then. I lost my job teaching seminary because of the divorce, but I got a job teaching elementary school at the neighborhood school where my kids went. And things worked out pretty well. I don't know how we survived. About the only thing I know how to fix is peanut butter and honey sandwiches, but somehow we survived.
And I know you're married now and you guys met at a singles conference. Will you tell me that story?
I remember going to a meeting and the chorister, quite a ways away, but I thought, she looks pretty cute. I think I'd like to meet her. So I looked on the program and her name was Diane Satterthwaite. Well, the conference ended and I didn't meet her. So the next year I went to the same conference and I was walking down the stairs in the student center and she was walking up and I saw her and I, which is not like me, but I just went up to her and said, "I want to meet you. You're Diane Satterthwaite, aren't you?" And she was, of course, shocked and taken back. But I guess it was okay because she accepted that and we started talking and just really hit it off and found out we had a lot in common. And that I had now been single 4 years and was kind of used to that, but she was ready to get married. And so she kind of finally, after a year, said, I'm moving on or else. So we got married, and we've been married for almost 39 years. And we've had two children since, and we were able to create a family unit like I always had hoped I'd be able to do. We worked very well together and had the same values and the same goals. And plus, going through a divorce was probably the hardest thing in my life. And I had to take a big, hard look at myself and realize that I was not a very good husband in many, many ways, and that I needed to change and do some things much differently. And fortunately, I had those 4 years to kind of work on that and fix our own food and take care of the kids. I learned a lot, and now I do the dishes and help a lot more around the house. Anyway, it's been good. Diane and I lived in Kaysville. We built a house together, bought the lot, hired our own builder, and did a lot of work ourselves, and lived there for 27 years, raised our two kids there.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about your kids and what it was like raising them.
Yeah, I remember especially, I think, when my first child was born. I was teaching seminary, and I remember seeing him thinking, this is the most miraculous thing I've ever witnessed. And he was just this perfect little child. He was just a beautiful baby, and just, oh my goodness. It is a miracle to see a child born. And after a week or two, my wife said, how come you come home for lunch every day? You used to never come home for lunch. I couldn't get enough of him.
And what was his name?
Will is the oldest. Actually, it's Lester William Jr. My father's name was Will. His father's name was William. And his grandfather's name was William. So it's an old family name. Then Elizabeth Soraya is our second. And then Alexander Dean, he's named after Dean as his maternal grandfather. And Jean Louise is, she was the baby. She was, and now she's a grandmother. then Laura, Jacob, made a lot of mistakes. I learned a lot of patience, especially with my older one, that poor little guy. And I look back and realize by the time the last two came along, I had learned a lot. And I think I was a much better dad with them than I was with the others. But I love sports, so I coached their little league baseball games and even soccer, even though I didn't know anything about soccer. And I learned a lot. There's a saying that the miracle isn't that adults produce children, but that children produce adults.
Les didn't just learn that from his own kids. He also learned it as an elementary school teacher and as a principal for 19 years. With all that experience under his belt, he developed and implemented a philosophy of doing away with rewards and punishments and respecting and loving the kids you work with.
What I found in working with kids and treating them with kindness and respect, and instead of trying to find fault or blame, I'd say, let's just find out what happened and then figure out how to solve it. And almost always, they would truly make a change. And there were some, you know, obviously repeat offenders and some kids who had behavior disabilities or problems, but changed the whole atmosphere, the whole feel of the school. I honestly saw miracles happen. One of the best notes I ever got, it was anonymous, but I would try to be there to greet the kids in the morning. And this one little girl came in kind of late, and she had a very sad look on her face. And the mother wrote me this note and said, we'd just had a bad morning. I was trying to get her to make her bed, do her chores, whatever. And we left on a really bad note. And she said, the first person she met when she walked through the door was you. And you said, wait a minute, you can't go to class until you give me a smile. Anyway, I kind of joked with her until she smiled and went off to class. And when she came home that night, she told her mother what had happened. And she said, I had a really good day. And she said, you just don't know how much that means to me. Probably the most meaningful thing that I did as an educator is to be able to help someone who's having a bad day. Have a good day.
Les had plenty of opportunities to do just that, both in his tenure as principal and also after his retirement. When he was 75, he was asked to come fill in as assistant principal of a Title I school for the remainder of the year. He said he saw as many kids in his office during the first month at that school as he did during his entire 19 years as a principal. Thankfully, he had the experience and the patience to really help those kids. To finish our interview, I asked Les what the most important things in his life are. He said his wife, children, and grandchildren, but it all ties into the gospel and having an eternal relationship with them.
The gospel and the plan of happiness, the fact that we can know that there is a life, you know, 80, it means you're not going to live too many more years, and no matter what you do. And so you start to look at life from a whole different perspective, that we don't know the details, but I have enough faith and enough trust that the Lord will see to it that we get to have those eternal relationships and a relationship with our family.
Les's stories are something special. He's taken the many lessons he's been taught to heart. Between losing his dad, appreciating his mom, promising to pray every day, and loving his kids, it's easy to find inspiration in all that he has learned and done. Thank you so much to Les Broadhead for letting me interview him and to Mina Richens for purchasing this episode. If there's someone you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com or visit our website at hearingourheritage.com.